Yeah, we don't think of ourselves as close to Texas, but that's okay. That's okay. Closer than you
Exactly.
usually are, so it's good to have you in America.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. I'm enjoying it here. But thanks to Marcus for bringing us all together to talk about one of the greatest
Yeah.
running events in the world,
Trouble running.
which I have no idea about, but luckily Bronco's
I know.
here.
I was gonna say, Matt, wait, what's your experience?
Zero. I mean, I've coached quite a lot of people to run at Boston, but
Yeah.
I've never actually, well, I have been to Boston, but not for the marathon.
That's
So,
crazy. That's crazy to me. I mean, I knew you hadn't run it, but I was thinking about it. I'm like, wait a second. You've gone to like everything I've wanted to go to, and I'm like, you haven't been to Boston.
yeah, no, it's one of the, I think it's really the only major that I haven't been to, because the other ones I've been to it or run or watched. So
Yeah.
yeah, I've just missed out for all these years, and I'm looking forward to going this year and
Yeah,
getting
of
amongst
course. That'd be
What's the
great.
goal for you though, for Boston? So the only reason why I've got an entry is because Reem's American, so Boston's like the grand final to qualify for. And she entered last year, and I entered assuming she was going to get in, right? Because she had the qualifier, but then she didn't get the 5-minute window. And then I was left with the entry. And for a while I was like, okay, I'll probably just cancel the entry. And then, you signed up, a whole lot of people I coached signed up, a whole bunch of friends are going, and I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna go. I'm living nearby, like for an
Yeah.
Australian nearby. And so I'll just go there for the race and run it. I'll probably just run at about 6-minute miles or around there, like a steady solid long run. Probably be pretty hard still, but yeah.
Maybe.
I saw that you're
Well, we can talk about that. I don't know how focused or wide ranging. I saw you sorry, I'll finish the thought. I'm not sure how focused or wide ranging you want to be on this podcast. I saw you obviously on Eric his video for like his preparations for Boston, which I have to say, I was thinking about it and I'm like, I know that we have to put goals out there for like storylines, but like sub 235 is just like, it
It's
strikes like
silly.
no excitement. I'm like, okay, dude, like,
Yeah.
but it's sad because like
I've been
230
this
is
like,
like, yeah.
I just switched microphones. Can you hear me okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
I basically had this discussion with him. I was like, but he knows, like, he kind of
yeah,
knows.
he know. He
He
obviously,
needs
I mean,
big time
he's a
for the thumbnail.
filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like, he's like,
No
our
one's going to go.
pursuit of this really random number. That's like, I don't know. It's
For
just
someone
funny.
that's I feel like for someone that's so I'm lacking the right word, like interested in Boston and loves Boston, I feel like that's almost a almost an offensive thing to do to come up with a time, because I know I've never been there, but I know that having a time goal in Boston is like not that doesn't really
It's
make a lot of
like,
sense. Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely had it, but in hindsight, we can talk about it. We can talk about the pod, like time goals. And I'm doing this whole workshop. I'll talk about like, and everyone just wants to know. They're just like, cut the shit, Bromka. Like, give me the splits I need to run to hit my, or
You're
then I'm like, well,
like 6 minutes.
yeah. By the way, we're recording, by the way. So I'm going to include some of this stuff in the pre chat as well.
Stuff normally
Marcus,
makes content, actually.
yeah, exactly. All the chopped
Perfect.
up. And Marcus, I want to get up to speed on how you're feeling on things as well. So you'll have to give us that rundown for those of us who, follow your training.
Yeah, don't let us hijack your series here. This is about you, Marcus.
No. I mean, it's good to learn from everyone else. So, but Peter, first of all, can I just talk about that sweatshirt, though? Obviously, the people that can't
Yeah.
hear the podcast, it says "Runners Don't Cry." Can you talk Runners
about
don't
that?
cry. This was wonderful. A woman I know, Margot Fleming, who actually her father, wait, why is that? Why am I blanking on her father's name? He won the New York City Marathon 50 years ago. And this is a tongue-in-cheek shirt, and it was a fundraiser for mental health nonprofit. The Jed Foundation, I believe, which is just, supporting people in reaching out in times of need. And so it's like a takeoff on Boys Don't Cry, the movie, from a while back now. I think it's like the same typeface. And so then it was like a tongue-in-cheek, like, no, actually people do go through a lot and it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to and so she sold these when she was running the Speed Project solo, when she was going from Los Angeles to Las Vegas over like 5 days, totally ridiculous. And yeah, it was cool. And I was like, well, that's a fun shirt. I'm getting more and more into the like ridiculous, I'd say, like paraphernalia, you know, like the official shirt from probably like, oh, that's a cool design. And then the like totally one off, like not going to see that shirt again, probably a bad idea, you know, like the clashing colors. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's for me. Yeah. So,
okay.
No, I like it to be honest, but I've got to admit that I've cried though.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the tongue in cheek part. Everyone's like, wait a second. And you're like, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we can talk about Boston, like my eyes are always open for like, who's going to do the pop-up, you know, run of just like a small run of whatever, from some obscure brand that we'll see, you know, that'll be out there. Cause I don't know, God forbid, I don't need another t-shirt, but I like, I'm like, ooh, that's kind of cool. And I'll end up buying it. I get home and I'm like, why did I buy more t-shirts?
So we could go down the Boston jacket route, but we're not going to go down that.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
All right. So for the listeners, this could give a bit of context. So myself, this is obviously the podcast, A Runner's Life, but this series is untitled, and I thought it'd be quite a fun idea to get my coach, Matt, and Peter, who I've become friends with on Relay, a really experienced runner, and got so much knowledge about Boston, on one sort of series to talk about my prep and to try to get as much information. So rather than doing the really boring kind of like, let's cue some music and I'll do an intro for both of you. Can you both give an intro of who you are?
So your podcast's normally boring, Marcus. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, let me cue the music.
Matt, please introduce yourself.
Okay, I'll go first. I'm Matt Fox. I've been running for a long time, 16 years, probably marathon for about 6 years now. And I've been working with Marcus for probably about 9 months on improving his all distances, really, from 5K through to the marathon. I'm a 220 marathoner myself, and have learned a lot of lessons along the way, progressing from 259 down to 220 in however long it is, 5 years. And yeah, I'm excited to be here and talk about Marcus's build up to Boston. We've got 7.5 weeks now, so it's pretty meaty training going on at this point because, yeah, I say it all the time, that sort of 3 week out to 10 week out block is really the specific phase, so to speak, although, you know, it goes all the way through until race day. But Marcus is in the middle of the really high volume now. So yeah, excited to be here. And thanks to Peter Bromke for joining us, because I actually haven't run Boston, and I've done, you know, I've actually only been there for 2 days on a holiday, maybe 5-6 years ago. But Bromke is the Boston Marathon master and expert, knows everything about the course, knows every meter, every mile. So a great combination of people here to discuss Boston Marathon and Marcus's build up.
Awesome. Peter, really quickly, actually, I want to ask this. Do you prefer being called Peter or Bromke? And does it matter, like, who asks you that, refers you to in that way?
Oh, that's funny you ask. I enjoy both. What's funny is no one calls me Pete, except for in certain athletic contexts, certain like coaches or coach types of my life will say it. We'll just automatically adopt like Pete over here. Neither of you were calling me Pete, but that's just a certain, I listen for it in certain contexts, but Peter or Bromke. Yeah. I mean, my last name is Polish, derivation from likely shortened when my great great grandparents came over to America. So there aren't a lot of Bromkes in the world. And actually, growing up, I think we thought we were the only. And then as the internet expanded, we were like, there's more Bromkes out there, but it's very unclear. So it's pretty rare. So it allows for like some, you know, clarity. I'm Peter Bromke. I am happy to be here with you two. Marcus, selfishly, when you told me that Matt was your coach, I was psyched because I was like, oh, like Matt and I have been trying to connect more. We got connected years ago, and I was like, you know, just looking to chop up ideas more with Matt. And I will say, as an intro, I have run the marathon, Boston Marathon, 8 times. I've run a bunch of marathons, been running for years. I ran it back as a charity runner in 2005. I was thinking about this, not to like toot my own horn, but I was like, I think there's probably not a ton of people who run as a charity runner, an open runner, and part of the pro start. And I was like, wow, that is kind of fun. But Matt, part of what I appreciate about your content is you have like thrown yourself into it enough that you've been fully like immersed in all the details and also humbled by all of the different facets of the sport, I would say, for those of us who follow closely. And I realized like I have this really black and white hot button judgment. I gauge people who post online, and it's whether they come at it from like, I'm the expert, I figured it out, and here you go, to like, okay, so this thing is really complex and it's like simple, but it's tricky. And here's some things you might run into and here's some things to watch out for. And I'm certainly in the latter. And I consider a lot of your content to be in the latter. It's like, okay, so here's the simple principles, but actually in reality, it gets tricky because of these things. And that's what I've appreciated about Sweat Elite, is like, you guys aren't saying like, here's the new method of training and you're an idiot if you don't adopt it. You're like, this is pretty enticing, probably could break most people. So and so that's what I've certainly, I think when we first got connected 2018 or 19, you'd yet to really throw yourself into the marathon. So I feel like as I have in some ways eased off the marathon, you have gone on full bore and have like tried every number of things. It's kind of fun, in Marcus. I'm not sure about you. I find it like, it's like this guy just keeps like pillaring himself with the marathon. We get to enjoy it. We get to learn from it. Hopefully he gets to like carry some of the best insights forward for his athletes like you.
Well, I appreciate that. And two things come to mind. One, about your Boston Marathon experience and how valuable that this is for this series, but also just in general, because I've found, and people wouldn't really know this until they've been in the position, but I've run 18 something marathons and not, you know, eight of Boston like you, but I've run marathons where I don't run them all out. I run them as what you sort of called as a charity runner. And I feel like you get a different perspective of the race and the course if you don't run all out. And when I ran New York Marathon in 2019 as a long run for Valencia, so 4 weeks before Valencia, and for, you know, for, this is a just to compare like the intensity of both runs. New York, I ran 2:48, and then Valencia ran 2:27, and Valencia was my target run. So that goes to show I was sort of 21 minutes slower. Yes, New York's a harder course, but the point is that experiencing New York Marathon, not going all out, I think was far different to what it would have been if I'd run it all out, because I was able to take in the crowd, actually high five people, take whatever I ate, hot dogs and whatever I was taking from the people in the crowd. And it was valuable. So I think having your experience in running it all out, but then also not, is really helpful in this case. Relating to Sweat Elite, I appreciate that very much. I mean, I've actually started Sweat Elite with the core understanding that the realization that I felt like I failed as a middle distance runner because I didn't qualify for the teams I wanted to qualify for. And so my initial motivation was to go, what am I missing and what don't I know? And so I think everything comes from that position of wanting to produce content rather than this is how to do it. I'm like, no, I actually don't know. So I've discovered it and here it is. And like you said, take it or leave it. It might hurt you, but here it is. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, at this point, like you're saying, Marcus, we have enough time to do some really good training before Boston. And at the same time, most people are like, fairly well within the thick of what they're doing. Maybe not like switching it up too much and hopefully like feeling good about their plan. And at the same time, like there will be bumps in the road. I just came down sick for 2 days with a stomach bug that's been going around our neighborhood. And I just try to remember like these things happen as part of a, you know, multi-month build. Like you're not gonna hit everything that's put on a plan. And the plan is just like, you know, written in pencil for, you know, what could be. So, Marcus, where should we start? There's so much about this course about the course and the event that I love to take on. Just a spoiler for like what I'm going to be referring to. I'm coaching six athletes. And then in thinking about how I wanted to prepare them for Boston, I ended up spinning up like a virtual workshop. So I've been doing a series of 1 hour sessions where we've been going literally 1 hour on goal setting and sort of winter training, one on like running form and sort of like how to navigate hills. Then we have yet to do the ones on fueling, course, weekend logistics, because I've learned from a lot of people who've asked me questions that like just like making the most but not too much of the Boston Marathon weekend can be a lot. And I know we're gonna plan to meet again to dive deeper on some of these. And so like all of those all together, each can take quite a bit of time. So just like, I'm sure people have questions. Although I'm finding the number one question that stands out is just like, come on, Peter, tell me how to pace this thing, this mad roller coaster of a course. Like,
they're thinking about their Strava graph, their Strava post already.
Yeah. Yeah. They're already like, how will it come? Actually, it's hilarious. Strava does this like a taller line for a fast and then a shorter line for a slow. And so if you think about it, there's a bit, this trend where I reposted a screenshot of someone from New York and it looks like this, and then it just curves in, and I put in like a gif of like a little eating like a Pac-Man. And I was like, anyone else, this was of my athlete actually, and he had slowed down. He still ran pretty well, but I was like, anyone else's look like this, like a Pac-Man ate out their splits. All these people replied like, hey, why'd you screenshot my splits? And then someone else was like, no, those were my splits. So, I mean, like, it's pretty common, I'd say, for the marathon. But that said, we all aspire to make it slightly more steady.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think there's a couple of things that you both touched on that I really want to go back to. Matt, when you're talking about New York and saying about, you know, you ran it at a certain pace and, you know, that kind of reminded me of the first time I ran Boston to the second time I ran Boston. Heartbreak Hill. The first time I ran it, I thought I was running at not as fast effort. And the second time I was running it at more higher effort. And the first time I was like, Heartbreak is not that bad. Second time, Heartbreak, I was like, Jesus Christ, when will this end?
So it got worse.
And it definitely humbled me. It reminded me of like what Peter said in one of your essays talking about, you know, at that point in the race, you can tell who's bluffing and who's not to this. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, those hills, Peter, for the people that don't know?
This week's episode is brought to you by Pillar Performance. Pillar is a sports micronutrition company. I'm currently testing out the following products: triple magnesium. I take that approximately an hour before going to bed. This product basically helps relieve sleeplessness and optimizes your sleep cycles. With the citrate and the chelated magnesiums will help iron out any muscle aches, pains, cramps during the training. I'm also using the Ultra B Active, which I take in the morning with breakfast. This is basically a multivitamin, and they use like a high strength dose of activated B vitamins, which help energy production by promoting metabolism of your fats, carbs, and proteins consumed. Then I'm also using the Ultra C, which I take at any time of day, one time. It's not really time sensitive, but I normally have it in the morning with breakfast, and this basically helps with my immune system, keeps it strong, and avoid the feelings of being run down due to high stress loads from training, work, and all that kind of madness. If you really want to find out more, go online and type in pillarperformance.shop and you can get 15% off your first time purchase using the code Marcus. Okay, with that being said, let's head back to the episode.
Yeah, oh man, the Newton Hills.
How many times have you covered this one, Bronca?
Yeah, I mean, if it's just
you must
like
unlook, this is going to be perfect.
Yeah, this is one, it's wonderful. Like, I love the Newton Hills, and like, to me, what I want to do is I want to build up the Newton Hills for people and make it as amazing and as important as it is. And yet, this is a theme that it's coming up again and again in my workshop. Let's not forget about the 5 miles after. Like, I want to name the 5 miles after, you know, it's like, I don't know what we would call them, but like the Newton Hills become so like large in people's minds, and they fall from 17 to 21. So that's about when most people's marathons get like really real. You go like, okay, how many cards do I really have? And you know, at 17, you're like, well, I don't know, maybe I'll like catch something on the river and I'll be all good. And for a poker reference for some friends. And then by 21, you're like, all right, here's where I'm sitting. And I can't bluff anymore. So the beauty of the Newton Hills, I think, is that almost quite literally, like there's very few turns in the course until the very famous last right hand, right on Hereford, left on Boylston. But the quasi turn at 17 around the firehouse really marks the beginning of the uphills. And so I have said to people, like, you can break down the course as simply as like running the first 16 and a bit controlled, then making that turn right, seeing the uphill, and like that's when the gun goes off for the true competition of the race. Because if at that point you have 9 miles to go, and like anyone who's run a good marathon knows, like if you can run well those last 9 miles, like you might look back, and I always point this out, we always look back on our PR day and think we could have gone faster. Like, that's just universally true. Like, when it all clicks, you think, like, it's really rare to think, like, oh, there's nothing else I could have gotten out of myself, because it was the day that it was going well. So with that said, you want to turn the right-hand turn and look at the upcoming hill that sort of slopes to the right. It, like, it's deceptive because it slopes away and then around the crowd, but it builds up and over, up to it goes over the highway. And it's just like, uh-oh, here we go. And so it's a series of an uphill, sort of like difficult stretch, and then a flat rolling stretch, and then an uphill stretch and a flat rolling stretch. And so I say flat because, and rolling, because it's sort of both. And so it's this, I think of it almost like a workout where it's like hard, easy, hard, easy, hard, easy. And that said, I just really want people, everyone wants to know, like, I've found out through running this workshop that people want all this information, but they really want to know, like, how do I make it through that gauntlet unscathed, or how do I make it through that with my wheels still on? And I think my answer is, like, you have to, like, no holds bar, like, gut check with yourself, like, am I running too hard or not? And they want to know, there are pace calculators you can look at online that say, like, oh, if you want in 3 hours, that would roughly, based on pure elevation math, that would look like a 7 minute to start, even though it's downhill. And that, there's, like, a lot of things that go into it. But they, you know, if you want to run 3 hours, which is 6:49 pace, like, it roughly goes between, you know, like, 6:20 on the downhills and 7:10 on the uphills, and it all averages out. But the reality is, I aspire for the athletes I coach to not be looking at their watch when they turn that and going uphill, and just really checking in with, how do I feel? Do I feel like I'm running in a sustainable way? And do I feel like I could go harder, but I'm not going harder, and I will use that effort later? And so it's a series of, you know, running under control and, you know, looking around at the people around you and taking in the crowd, but also just being like, I can only run as hard uphill as I can run. And then I will try to shift gears every time that it flattens out. So it's more a series of control, but, like you're saying, difficult, like, oh no, this is hard. But every time, it's like almost audacious to say, when it's hard, I'm going to ease off a little bit, than to say, like, I'm going to grind. Because what you do is you end up with so many people, like, if I had a dollar for everyone said, like, I got to the top of Heartbreak, totally cashed, and then it was just like a struggle all the way home. And I'm like, oh, struggle all the way home when it's a downhill and the crowds are going wild, and just like, it's like, it's such a shame. I think of it as, like, you know, the cherry on top, and you're just like, oh no, couldn't enjoy that, had to throw it on in the trash. And so those series of hills I think of as so important, that, like, you really do need to do a bunch of things right that we can talk about, to earn the right to, like, race those final 5 miles. And even if you're maintaining going up those hills, like, within control, you'll find it's like, it's almost like people are rocketing back at you. Like, I've had people in, particularly back when I used to start, like, further back, there would be people ahead of me, and they would just start to walk, and they'd come flying back at you, and have to, you know, you'd have to go around them, because it's like they'd be charging and you're charging, and you're like, just put my head down and grind. And then they would, like, stop and walk, and you'd be like, whoa, this person's in front of me, like, they've just basically exploded, and, like, they're just going to start walking. And so this is the long answer. I'm sure I could just solo monologue.
Keep going. Brilliant.
But it's the idea is that, like, you do check in with who's around you. You check in with your heart rate. I used to wear a heart rate monitor back in, like, 2016, 2017. And I used it kind of inversely. I would use it in training and try to get a sense of, okay, when do I feel in control? And then look at the numbers. And I had the sense of, like, that was back when I was running, like, low 240s. And I was like, oh yeah, like 165 ish. If it's under 165, like, I had seen in training, like, that felt very sustainable for me. And so then I would use that in race day as I was going up those hills. I would look, and it was like, I'd be like, man, this is hard. And I'd look, and it would be like, you know, 162. And I'd be like, okay, like, I'm still, I would use it as that confidence rather than, oh, I'm at 172. I should back off. My goal was not to like go over and then use it to force me to slow down. But man, like all I can say to people is if you have legs, those final 5 miles, like the crowds are nuts. It is downhill. I mean, it's just nuts. So yeah, I think that's, I'm curious if that's reflective of, I know you ran hard last year, Marcus, and it was like, it becomes a bit of a blur when you're really going hard. I'm curious how well that matches your memory.
Do you know, when you described after 16 and a half, like that was like a really perfect description of it for me personally, like the sort of, it's rolling and then, you know, you got the sort of flattish bits, but not really flat. And I remember when the bit, when you get towards the end and over heartbreak, that's when like it felt like the race for me started as well. But I think the thing as well, for a bit of a context as well, Heartbreak Hill in itself isn't that terrible. It's just the stuff beforehand, which basically gets you into that place. And I remember, do you know the actual incline before Heartbreak? Mm-hmm. That's the one that tricked me. In my head, I was like, I counted it wrong. And I sort of thought, this is Heartbreak. And then I was getting towards the end, so I was like, this is not Heartbreak. And you know, it sort of plays in your mind, like, you're like, damn, like, I've got another fucking hill to go up. Do you know what I mean? So it does play games in your head.
It is weird. It's just a weird, I've said this on, I think, other calls we've had on Relay about, like, I realized years ago that I think if you ran the first 13 miles of that course and just finished in Wellesley, like if the three of us met on Sunday, I think it would be like rather quick. And you would feel like a little beaten up. You'd be like, that was weird. I just felt like, I feel a little more like, I feel a little more off than I would expect. And so I don't think it's like some magical, like, you know, I'm making it sound like some foreign, like one of my son's like sci-fi books of like, there's dragons and like mystery out there. But like, you do feel, I mean, I was pretty well trained last year. And I think at mile 8 or 9, like my calf like did a little like crampy wiggle, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like 9 mile, I was like, just, and I was able to hold it off, like I was able to like smooth out my stride, and I don't know what it was, but it's just, it gets you in weird ways. And so I will say, like, the other thing I say to my friends is, they're like, dude, after their first Boston, they're like, dude, I felt like trash at like 21. I felt like, and I'm like, okay, yeah. And like, it's like, you're gonna feel like trash. And then it's like what you do with that trash. Yeah. I like it. And it sounds super dramatic, but I mean, I had a buddy in 2019, he was just torching me in workouts. He was just lighting me up. I would just be like, bye. And then we started in separate spaces because I got invited to that elite corral that year. And afterwards we're like limping around the North End getting some cannolis. And I'm like, dude, what happened? Like, what happened? I beat him by like 10 or 12 minutes. And he's like, he just looks down at his quads. He's like, it's someone, like someone had stabbed me in both of my quads. I mean, this man had gone out in like 69 minutes for the half. You know, he was like, today it's on. Like, it is on. I am firing on all cylinders. Like, we are firing, like guns blazing. And you're just like, I'm like, oh no, oh no. So, I mean, he was welled. He had every reason to believe he could break 70 for the half and like on a downhill course and like be ready to go. And he just like lit himself in flames. Like, it was just nuts.
I got a couple of questions for you, Bronco, about it really. Firstly, huge thank you to you for sharing that sort of 4 to 5 minutes about Boston. I feel like I'm more mentally prepared for this course now, having listened to that, because just the way you described it was really easy for me to sort of envision myself going through it. But the two questions I have based on the last couple of things you said that I'm super curious about. Firstly, you said if we met at halfway of the course, you would feel like that. I'm curious to know, if you were to compare like the first half of the course and then let's say start another race to start halfway and finish at the end, so the first half of the course and the second half of the course, how fast do you think each of those sections are comparing to if you just did a half marathon in good weather on the flat? So first half, would you say it's 30 seconds quicker than that? The second half, I assume it might be 2 to 3 minutes slower than that. That's the first question I have for you, and then I'll shoot you with the next.
Yeah. I mean, I think of it, oh shoot, I need to look a little more closely. I think of the first half as like a minute fast. Like, I think if you just ripped it, I mean, I've seen people be like, I might just rip the first half and try to set a half marathon PR. It would destroy your legs. I mean, I've never run one of these, like, there's a rising popularity of these downhill races, where you can just fly off a mountain. And so I think of it as like whatever shape I'm in, it's about, I think I go like a minute, 2 minutes, roughly. I don't think the negative split, positive split, what do we call it? Like even split? I think even split should be like anywhere within a minute or 90 seconds ish, you know, because it's like, I mean, that's a lot of, sometimes people sort of call it an even split if it's within like 15 seconds. And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, that's a lot of running to be dead level. So I think of it as more like you want to be fast a minute. It gives you a minute and then it takes 2 minutes. So it's like a minute slow. But I think I'd have to check my math, and I'm sure someone could check my math for me. Because I definitely try to give myself a range on the front end. And then I try to give myself, just some gimme seconds on the latter half. The combination of, I mean, the real thing is like, you need to give yourself some seconds to slow. You need to like internalize, I'm going to go slower, and that's totally fine. I think there's so much self-judgment around the splits people don't want to see. You know, like as someone who runs marathons at 5:20 pace, like I don't want to see a 6 minute split going up Heartbreak, but like, I guess the answer is I just don't look at it and I just keep going, like, you know, and it's just like, it's that thing. You must see it all the time. And you both are coaches and you see it. Like, there's the thing that athletes will acknowledge, and then there's the thing that they like don't even want to admit. And it's like the splits that they're like, no, I don't want to see an 8 minute pace. I'm willing to like dig deep to not see an 8 minute pace. And you're like, are you willing to blow up at the top of Heartbreak to not see it? Like, I think it's good to like build in like, hey, I'm going to slow down on this section, and that's totally fine. And then honestly, the last 4 miles are just, you just watch people are running on fumes. And so I've literally had friends be beating themselves up and be like, I gave in, I didn't run hard, I wish I could have run harder the last 4 miles. And then I've screenshotted my splits and their splits. This is a day where everyone's like, Peter, you ran so well. Da, 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 da. And I've compared and I've been like, this was a woman, Emily. I was like, Emily, we both slowed down the final 4 miles relative to our average pace. But I was further up and everyone's like, oh, you're running well. And I'm like, you ran really well. She had run really well that day, but she felt like it's rare that someone finishes those last 4 miles and doesn't feel like they could have, like they should have been able to go harder, quote unquote. And so, you know, and we can talk about time goals at Boston and yada, yada, like, and the benefits and drawbacks to them. In this case, this woman, Emily, came in with a certain time, which this doesn't get talked about enough, like seeds her at a certain number in the field. And your bib is like based on your seed. And so she had finished it. Let's say she like came in ranked with bib 15,000 and like finished 12,000 or something. I'm like, you definitively like surpassed largely what you were. So focus on that. And I think it's harder for people to internalize that because they're like, oh, that's meaningless, I'm just going to look at the clock. Whereas like when you're in the top 250 in the race, let's say, people are like, oh wow, like you finished here, you finished there. And it's like, it's all relative, it's all like similar things, but it just seems different, I think. So I've often felt like I was encouraging my friends to like slow down when your body's telling you to slow down, and then like try to embrace those miles. Like there's a lot of hype around the early downhills, but there's a lot of traffic early on. It's like, so I think we can talk about hill running in more specifics, but like, you know, I encourage people to like try to run within reason going downhill, to try to practice running downhill in the coming weeks. That's a great tip for people. And, you know, with this many weeks out, like it's hard on the body to run downhill. And so it like takes some like familiarity and some coordination. And it's also difficult to like really take in the first 3 to 4 miles because it's so early. You have so long to go to like bomb down those hills feels risky, and it is risky. Whereas like mile 24, I'm like, guys, mile 24, it was the fast. Meb, when he won Boston 10 years ago, that was his fastest split of the day. He just like bombed down 24. Now, your legs feel like absolute trash. It's just like the crowds are going nuts and you're like, oh no, this is when I'm supposed to go hard. And you know, you have that little voice in the back of your head of like, I made some plans for this, but maybe I'll just sustain here. And it's like, so you really have to like mentally prepare, like to race those miles, which sounds all nice and good when you're sitting here in March, but by the middle of the day on April 15th, it's like, oh no, that was a horrible idea. This is going to be really hard. And it's like, yeah, that's what we signed up for.
It gets real. Yeah. I want to talk about the hills, but I know Matt's got another question because I know you were about to touch into it. I was about to go like, Peter, no, hold on.
Well, it's relating exactly to the hills. And you referenced a teammate of yours that you trained with and sort of was stitching you up in training, but then you beat him by 10, 12 minutes on the day. I'm curious to know, and it sounds like the difference was that the training maybe, I mean, yeah, my question is, what did you do that he didn't do in order for you to be able to beat him by 10 to 12 minutes on the day, despite him, you know, you could probably agree he was aerobically fitter than you, maybe, but you were the man to beat him on the day, and for what reason?
So I have gotten super lucky in that I have had training mates preparing for Boston. Several years I had friends and training mates preparing for Boston and then actually competing with me. And I mean, that's just worth its weight in gold because of the stuff we talked about where, so 2019, I'm like, I go to Boston with six of my friends and like, I could definitely have finished sixth for us, like absolutely possible. But it's the marathon and through a variety of like mishaps and craziness at like three or four of them, it was their first Boston. We were trying to win the Boston team title, which is like a very unspoken about, like for some reason, like small thing of like the average time, the total time of your top three runners. And so I had my teammate and friend, Patrick, and I had been invited to the pro field. He got invited early and I got invited the week of, and I'm like, all right, so there's my number from when I got to be part of the pro field. It was an amazing experience, but it's actually pretty daunting because you're sort of left in no man's land. That was the first year that they separated the men's start from the rest of the field by 2 minutes. And so I was anticipating it'd be sort of an honor. Actually, I didn't get in at first. And then I was like, well, I was disappointed, but I was like, I could run up with them. And then they invited me and they also announced that it would be a separation. So we are off in this bubble. This is a long way of saying the benefit that I had was running with a friend who I was able to check in with. And when you know a training mate and you know what they're capable of and you respect them, it almost is like a mirror to yourself. So we get off going, it happened to be slightly humid. It had rained that morning and then it got warm. So it's like sort of like baking you from below every day. I mean, that's another thing we could talk about. Like Boston is either it's hot or it's cold or it's windy or it's rainy or it's like it's warm early or it's warm late. So it's helpful to have a teammate to just say like, to check in with, like, it gets to the point where you know your teammates' breathing patterns. And I knew that this man who I was training with, Patrick, he was one of the men who was, I felt definitely fitter than me. He had just run 2:17 for the marathon shortly before that, 4 months before. And I could tell his breathing was off. And so you're like, okay, I'm doing all right. But not that great. And his breathing's off. And so then I think we were planning to run like 2:520s. And then at some point I turned around and I was like, I feel like shit. And he's like, I feel like shit. And we're both like, let's just slow down 5 seconds a mile. And just like, it is what it is. You know, it's like, you can only do what you can do. And let's just make the most of what we can make of this. And man, if that didn't turn out to be like the best thing that ever happened to me, like I was able to respect how I was feeling. We were able to go together. I ended up beating Patrick by a minute or so on that day, but we both had like pretty strong days. Whereas the guy, and this was, I think maybe his fifth Boston. It was my fifth or sixth at the time. Whereas the guys who were fitter than me, who were like, they started at the start of the open field and they were just like, today's the day. Like we are fit and we have multiple guys and we are going to hammer. And so I think I could say respectfully, like they had no respect for the course. They were just like I'm going to use the downhills. I'm going to use the flats. And they were more than capable of just like flying on the flats and flying on the downhills. And it, I guess, just did a lot of damage to their quads. Like, you could boil it down to as simple as like just trauma to the muscles of their quads, because then once the course starts to turn upwards, they were just like, oh shoot. Like, I have no power. I'm getting like all this, you know, this pain signal sent to me, and you can just lose a tremendous amount of time in the final 10 miles. And so that's where I was still racing. Cause I, like, it's hard to understate like how amazing it is to have a positive mental loop and like momentum feeling in the final 10 versus a negative. And yeah, if you feel like you're catching people, if you feel like you're fighting for something, it could be like, and it doesn't have to be a time or a place. It could be like, you're just like, you're running for a cause you believe in. You're like running to make the most of the day. But if you like, you're still engaged those final 9 miles, it's really incredible. And so, yeah, it's like they're both named Chris, but one guy, Chris, I had been referencing about his quads. The other guy, Chris, I think ran like 236, 237. And we just have photos of him walking at mile 22. He's just walking. And like, we knew, you know, Jason Suarez, I'm not afraid to fail, the photographer. He's like world famous, travels the world. He just like took these like beautiful, soft focus like shots of our buddies just walking along the course. And we're like, oh man, who knew you could like walk at 236? But yeah, it was like they had gone out so hard that they, you know, they ran something like a 69, you know, 117, 118. So it's just, it's hard to overstate how much risk there is involved in going fast early. And at the same time, like, you should check in with your body and like run the downhills in a way that feels free and feels moving. I don't think people should like artificially, you know, brake and get into the territory of like slamming on the brakes and running in some artificial way. I think it's just like trying to respect that flow.
I really like hearing the nuance in how to race Boston. So no, thank you for like giving a bit more context to that. And something I was thinking about was just kind of talking a little bit about hill training. And I don't really want to go down the kind of the boring, okay, these are the hill workouts that you need to do. I'd be curious to talk a little bit, Peter, about the hill training that you're doing now. But also, I want to bring Matt into it first, and to talk a little bit about the training that we're doing together to prep me for the hills of Boston.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, we've been basically specifically preparing for about 4 weeks already. We're doing a pretty standard 7-day cycle where there's a midweek workout that involves a combination of threshold and VO2 max work. So it's all faster than marathon effort, or I don't like to specifically work around at marathon pace just because of elevation and stress and sleep and all these things. But that midweek workout for Marcus has typically been on a Thursday, sometimes on a Wednesday, depending on what he's got going on. And then on the weekend, we're doing a long run. And everything in between that is just sort of easy, between 45 and 80 minutes of easy running at an aerobic pace. So pretty simple cycle. And on the weekends, we're now up to, well, this weekend it'll be 20 miles, and then the following weekend it'll be 22 miles. So we're really getting up to the longer runs now. But Marcus has been awesome with sort of telling me, you know, he's got these specific courses and these ideas in mind around doing these blocks with hills involved. So he's brought a workout to me called the 242 workout, which involves some tempo running for 2 miles at the start, a section in the middle that's a 4-mile segment with quite a lot of hills as well. So Marcus is sort of bringing the hills ideas to me in a sense, and we're working together to implement them. But in my eyes at the moment, and Bromka, it'd be great to hear what you think about this. I think that it's mandatory in my eyes to be doing these workouts on the hills, at least one of those every week on a pretty hilly course. How you structure those is another thing, as in like, do you actually segment out a part of a run to be downhill, uphill, or do you just say, do this workout on a relatively hilly course? I've been saying the later, do this workout on a relatively hilly course. We both know, Marcus and I, and of course Bromka knows, that there's around about 1,000 feet of elevation gain, give or take. I think it's 100 meters. I could be slightly off with that. It's about 330 meters. I'm in meters. I don't even know what feet are, but I do my best to convert. But yeah, we know that that's about how much. So we know that in a long run of 20 miles or 22 miles, we want to be trying to get in around about the same elevation gain or slightly less, because that would mimic the Boston course. So that's what we have been doing. And I think so far you've put yourself in a position to run really well in Boston. We'll eventually get to the conversation around what time we should go for, because I don't, you know, Bromka's got some good insight into thinking maybe that's not even a good idea to pick a specific time, but we'll talk about that and all the different dynamics to that. But that's what we have been doing. We've been 4 weeks in. I guess we've got about 6.5 weeks to go until taper time, and so far it's been going pretty well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm sort of want to touch on what you just said there, I think is really important, is just the workouts on the hills. And I think for me, and something you said as well, Peter, even in the race, but it's something I've put in the workout, you've got to like almost separate your mind from looking at the paces. Because some of the times I do the workouts either before work, early morning, which you're not feeling great anyways, or sometimes you do it on the weekend, which is later in the morning. And it's still like the same sort of thing. All right, don't look too much at the pace, at the actual paces, but look at the effort. And it is a bit of a mind trip, because sometimes like my usual route, if I'm doing like a Berlin block, I'd be like in Victoria Park, just doing the flats, just that 2 mile loop, just flying around it. But obviously that's not what's required for Boston. So,
yeah, I mean, I think both ways of training on hills are good. I think sometimes people, there's classic stories because they're Portland, Oregon, where I live, is where Nike is. And so there's pro athletes here. So you hear these stories about people who have found local ways of almost mimicking like a downhill and then a flat. And then you come back and you run the uphill at around mile 16 of the training run. And, you know, really dialing in the training route that mimics exactly a long run that yada, yada, yada. And I mean, I don't think that's bad. I just don't think it's totally necessary. I think of it more as, can you mimic the sensations that you're going to experience on race day such that it feels very natural to both like throw yourself into flight downhill without crashing and without like over revving, without overdoing it. I land as simply as like there's a 3.5 mile, the tallest hill in Portland on the west side has a 3.5 mile route around it called Fairmont Avenue and Fairmont Boulevard. And it just happens to like undulate quite a bit. And if you think of a workout, you know, multiple 3 mile reps or multiple 5 mile reps, and then you apply it on that route, it's nothing magical. It's just like none of the uphills are so dramatic that you think like, oh, this is like, you know, just a digger and I'm going to have to settle in. So, I mean, you call that probably like 4%, 3 to 5%. I always think when I have athletes do hill reps, I like to get them like more like 6, 8 to 9%, because then you're like changing and driving your knees, in my experience, versus the like more shallow hill is like kind of runnable. And, so when people say like they're going to find a hilly route, I sometimes worry that they're going to find like that mountain that they run up, which I think totally can be advantageous if used like what it is. So we would sometimes like as training mates be like, okay, we're going to, you know, do this run. And then when we get to these two gargantuan hills, we're going to like tempo up them together. And we're just going to, it's going to suck. It's going to be hard. We're going to like have to get all the form cues and all the breathing calm and settle in, knowing that these hills are way steeper than anything at Boston, but just sort of like anything, like you do VO2 max work, even though you're not going to try to run at that pace on race day. So, I think both are valuable, but I would encourage people to check in with like, both can they give themselves, like you're saying, weekly opportunities to check in with how hard am I running and is this sustainable? And it's okay if it's above the line, if it's like a shorter effort and it's needs to be below the line, if I'm attempting to incorporate this into a long run. And then on the downhills, you know, can I, again, go downhill without slapping my feet, without like jarring my body, without sending all of that? Can I hold my body in a way where I'm like skipping across the ground and not kind of like landing on my heels and smashing into it. It feels like it gets maybe overly technical, or like, I don't want to get into people's heads around like, oh no, it's like a million things to think about. It really should be intuition based and like this feeling of flow. But I think we get away from that. I mean, even the way you're describing your workouts, Marcus, I'm fascinated by we've added more and more data to our watches available.
Oh, goodness, and I love where you're going here.
Yeah. And it gets people so far away from like just that feeling of
Bronco,
like,
can I make a statement that I think you'd find funny?
Yeah.
Approaching Boston, having absolutely no idea how to run a marathon may actually be the best way.
Yeah. I mean, if you just
provided that you know it's very hilly at the end.
Yeah. Like maybe not no idea what the course looks like. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because then you won't think about or worry about paces. You'll probably naturally go, I'm going to run to how I feel. And I know there's hills coming, so I'm going to be a little bit conservative.
If you were a little conservative, I mean, I wrote a whole piece for Podium Runner years ago called Don't Burn the Marshmallow, because I was running the Fall Boston and I was teaching my son that summer how to roast marshmallows. And I realized in my mind after being like, well, hold it close to the fire, but not too close. And like, you can always hold it closer to the fire later, but you can't unburn it. I was like, that's the perfect analogy for like how people run Boston. Like you always have these 5 miles at the end to really unleash. Like if you come ripping down Boylston and you're like, whoo, man, I had so much left. Like, you must have run very conservatively. So it's this idea of, like you're saying, with like proper reservation, awareness, but also really checked in with your body. And just like the way that watches start to give us our instantaneous pace. I think if it could give us our moving pace and it didn't cause this cycle of like excitement or fear or like self-judgment, and it was just, if it was purely just like numbers and it didn't hit us in any way, that would be fine. But I think it sends people into, oh, I'm moving too slowly, I gotta go. I mean, some of the smartest running I've ever seen, 1 year, I think it was 2017, we turned uphill. Patrick had gotten ahead of me by like 20 meters. This is a man I've run Boston with several times. And then I caught him going up over the highway at 17 and a half. And he's like, I'm just going to hang back for a bit. Like, I'm not feeling it at the moment. Sure enough, he came like charging back like 2 miles later and was feeling good and moved past me. And, you know, we finished within like 30 seconds of each other. And again, that type of like awareness of how you're doing, but also there was always this validating effect of like, I give lots of props to my teammates who are around me, because you're like, I think I'm feeling this. And then I know how good that guy is and he's in the similar zone. Okay, like I'm all right. So it's not to say I'm by any means like beyond like the needing to worry about like the self-judgment and the self-criticism and the concern around like, I'm not doing enough. But you can also like, I've had times where I was ahead of my friends and I was like, hey, I would be like, you can't be negative now. Like, you are beating the guys who should be beating you. Like, you have to remain positive. Like, and I would just like come up with all these scenarios in my head of like, I know you feel horrible. But like, it is going well, you know, because your brain, you get so tired going like mile 23. It's like this gradual roller along BU. And it's just like, this is so dreadful. And you see people just all of a sudden stopping and walking. You know, for me, I see pros that have like blown up and they're just like, and I'm like, okay, like that guy's a professional runner and I'm about to like blow by him. But your mind is like really trying to make you slow down and really trying to make you give in. I had a buddy who I knew from college standing at 5K to go, and he was just like cackling, laughing. He's like, 5K to go, Bronco, 5K to go. And he was just like, it was this cruel punishment. And he knew I was running well, but he was just like, this is going to suck so much for you. And I was like, I know it's going to suck. It's gonna be horrible. But I mean, like, we can do these hard things. I think like all these things that people talk about, I feel like something like cold water therapy has become like way too exploded because of how much money people are making off of it. But I do think things like that, like going, having those techniques of like, I can subject myself to discomfort and I'll be okay. Like, I'm all right. This is hard, but like, you know, you check in with like, I don't need to go to the medical tent. I'm just like in discomfort and it'll be over in a matter of time.
Peter, I'm curious. If you were going to do an episode of Sweat Elite, right, and you want to talk about one specific hill workout that you're doing for this Boston training, not for your athletes, but you're doing, like, what would that be?
Oh, I mean, I will say I'm almost a bad coach because I get too far. I don't love the numbers. I don't love the specifics. Like, I don't actually love the specifics. Like, you can tell how passionate I am about all of it. I would just say, like, it's me rolling with my friends up around, it's like a steady tempo around this 3.5 mile, like, rolling, undulating, where you're like, you know, you're getting slightly ahead of people, you're getting slightly behind, you're having to, like, constantly check in with, you know, I was up there last week doing like 10 miles of slight progression. And at one point I was just like, oh, this is getting hard. And I closed my eyes. And then it's like never being steady. Like, we then were tipping downhill and then turning. And so then I clipped my friend's heel. And then I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry. Like, it's like, I'm giving you an essayist answer to a question for a scientist. But I guess I would say, like, finding that, to me, it always culminates, my training blocks almost always culminate with that 15, 16 mile tempo that's like starts slightly slower than marathon effort and then finishes slightly faster. And yet I try to avoid overhyping that workout because people end up racing it to say, like, look how, like, fit I am, I'm so ready. And you're like, well, you just sort of race what was intended to be a practice session. And then I also don't want people to get too in their heads. I've definitely gotten almost too much in my head about, like, well, if that's the pace, then what does that mean? Because, you know, these are practice sessions. They're intended to, like, improve your fitness, not prove your fitness. I would just say, like, so it's anything. It's like
any variation. Everything I've heard then, it sounds like a 15-mile hilly course with your friends. The second half has to be faster than the first half, and time is irrelevant. And you have to make sure you finish, not all out.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for helping me.
Oh, I just paraphrased your
answer. Yeah. That's the thing. You can, like, get going a little bit at the end, but I've definitely had friends who, you see it all the time, they kick in the tempo at the end with 3 weeks to go. And you're like, as long as you didn't really cash yourself, but oftentimes that does deplete people more than it's worth.
Great advice.
I think there are different ways to approach it. And then how do I say this? Like, I wrote an article years ago that was like, you can chop it up as like 10, 16 and 10, you know, like 16 miles, which is not uncommon for how to approach a marathon. And then there's the more nuanced, like 5 downhill, 10 flat, and then 1-2, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. So there's like nuanced ways or more general ways. But the thing I would say to people is, like, I'm not getting faster. I'm trying to write a piece right now about, like, this idea of urgency and, like, what you need versus want out on the course. Because I think when we're talking about, Matt, like, times and what people really, like, what they're doing out there, what they're striving for, what I have found is that, like, there were definitely years I was out there and I just, like, needed to, like, pour myself into it. Like, for different reasons on different years, I was just like, I am so driven to pour every last ounce of myself into this performance, that sort of translated into splits, but it was more what kept me, like, so focused and still engaged. And that's everything from, like, I went to college in the Boston area. Like, I know the hills. I know, like, I have, like, my old team, the guys are much younger than me now, like, we'll be out there at, like, the top of heartbreak cheering. My parents met at Boston College, and, like, I just get, like, emotional going through, you know, that era. And I'm just like, I think of, like, my dad ran it many, many years ago. And I just, like, I'm consumed by, like, staying in the moment and trying to race where, honestly, like, last year I was running and I'd, like, had a lot going on and I was excited to be out there, but these guys would come up and they're like, come on, Baromka, we gotta go. Like we're going to break 2:30 today. And I'm like, oh yeah, like, awesome. Like, keep at it. And I just realized, like, I've already done that. I wasn't totally driven by it. And I didn't feel the same need. I, like, had a desire to run well, but, I think it's hard enough as a course that you get down there and you're left with, like, okay, what do I need to do today? Like, comes to the forefront pretty clearly versus, like, what would be nice or what splits would I like to see?
Okay, cool. There's so much we've touched on with just like the nuance of Boston training and all that sort of stuff. I think it's probably like a good place to kind of wrap it up, because I know, Peter, yeah, you had to drop off your kids. I need to like drop off and pick up my kid now. So I think that's just the Boston Marathon training life for quite a few people. So
enough of me. I have a lot more questions for both of you next time we chat.
Good stuff. No, thank you both. And looking forward to episode 2.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good times.